Hi, and welcome back to A New Sound with me, Morgan Brown. Thank you so much for tuning back in. I took some time off for myself because, well, 2020 is still very much happening. And I definitely needed a little break to work on some other projects. But thank you so much again for listening and supporting me in any way you possibly can. And I love doing this podcast because it really gives me an escape from any other creative thing. I just truly love talking to my friends or other collaborators or writers, artists, really anyone, just to talk about their process, the business, and anything else. So thank you very much for supporting me. One of my friends, indeed, is actually on this podcast today. His name is Max Dorado, one of the most talented, handsome, adorable people I've ever met or have ever had the pleasure of hanging out with. Max is absolutely incredible. I've been a huge fan of him since he first showed me some songs in a dorm room at Emerson. And he is just a truly incredible person. He actually just released a video for a song that he, well, was supposed to premiere on this podcast, but the podcast did not come out until now. So stick around for the end and listen to his acoustic version of Song for Jen. It's so good. Listen, it's truly awesome. He's just an amazing, amazing person. He's done so much work with Spider Rock and his dance projects and his indie. He's an extremely hardworking person. So without any further ado, here's my interview with the one and only Max Dorado. And thank you so much again for supporting the podcast. Check it out.
Hold yourself together, oh, I know better than them, better than them. Fold yourself together, no, you know better than them, better than them. For a Buddhist, you're in quite a row.
So how are you?
La 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 la. This is the start.
Oh my god.
Oh, I am great. I genuinely, like, all tragedy aside, love this.
Right? I
just set up my, so like I'm in right now my studio.
Kind love of it.
Like my garage. I was like, I'm going to be here for a while.
So that's good.
I just pimped it out.
Do you find that it's hard to talk to people about being in quarantine? Because you're like, yeah, like a lot of people died, but like I'm thriving.
Yeah. Yes. Especially with like friends.
Right.
Especially because they're like, man, like I wish we could all hang out. And I'm like,
I'm good.
I'll see you. Steven always gets mad because I am a really, really bad texter. And especially right now, like, if I'm working on music, I don't like to text because it puts me somewhere else. And so, like, I think with Steven, I'm like, you're, like, my best friend. You are the person that I will probably be best friends with for the rest of my life. Like, I have as close to forever as possible to talk to you. I'm not going to text you back right now.
So now, are you in LA or are you in Boston or Mass?
I'm in Boston. Massachusetts.
Yeah, awesome. Sweet.
Yeah.
When did you get back? And were you flying during quarantine?
No. So the day that all of the supermarkets went down, I jumped on a plane.
Gotcha.
I was just like, I have a nice... I have like a good amount of space in my house just to like I have my garage that I can sit in. I was like, and I'm pretty, I can like write with my parents around. So like I had a nice situation where I was like, I'm just going to come home.
No, that's exactly. I was going to go home to Braintree, but I just set up my whole like studio thing in New York. Cause I just have a brand new apartment here.
Okay. Yeah.
So I just set up my whole area. Like you can't really see it. Like you have stuff behind you.
Yeah.
But I have like my guitar stands. I have like my amping cab with like my mic in it. I have like my piano. Like I'm I'm over here doing my thing, you know, which is great.
My roommate in LA. So I've just like officially moved back to Boston for a bit. So my roommate just helped me get my car shipped back here and like threw all my music stuff that was in LA here. So just last night I set it up so that sitting here, I have access to everything. So like I have a MIDI keyboard right here, synthesizer, like DJ turntable, all my microphones, a tape recorder, hard drives, microphone, monitors, interface, like guitar pedals, everything. And I'm so stoked about it. I've never been happier.
That's awesome. Now, when you're doing music and stuff, when you're starting to do production, what part do you go with first? Like, because obviously you're one of the people that I've met and have continued to be impressed with, but how many different musical projects you do, which is absurd.
And it only makes sense that every single song starts, like every single project starts differently. So if I'm making a dance track, drum beats usually first. Just like, not even like fully fledged out, just a crappy like drum samples that I have on my computer. Not like any type of snare works, any kick drum, just a beat that I can kind of get into it. I like the way that the Talking Heads and the LCD Sound System build a dance track where like you hear the drums, then you hear the bass guitar, then you hear the guitars, then you hear the vocals. That's exactly how I write the dance track.
Okay, cool.
But then with acoustic music, I start off, I think pretty regularly, like most people, start off a little bit of chords. And like, I'm just like, nah, 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 duh. Ooh, that one, like, until I find the start of a melody, and then I write the lyrics with just the little piece of the melody that I have, and then I write lyrics to kind of fit that vibe, and then I find the melody from the lyrics. Recently, that's what I've been doing recently.
Got you. Now, obviously, you've also been doing a lot of like producing work, like for other people. How would you go, like, how collaborative is it when you're working with, like, as a producer? Because you have your music, like, your dance music, your dance tracks, you have your, you have, when you're doing acoustic, then you have your, like, your songs, and it's just very, you, very stripped down. But do you find it hard to collaborate, like, as a producer, or do you find it, well, what amount goes into that?
I think it definitely depends on who I'm producing, because like right now, the two people that I've been producing mainly have been Steven with Spider Rock and my friend Nike with Nike Vendella, who just put out a song.
Yeah, that track's sick, by the way.
It's beautiful completely because of her. Like, beautiful voice, all chords and everything written by her. And so, but two very different friends. So, like, Steven, obviously, best friend. I can be frustrated with him. I can sit next to him and I can say, like if something doesn't work and he's like, that doesn't work, I can look at him and I can be like, can I finish? Like, can I just play out the idea? Nike, now we've gotten closer as friends, but we started off producing before we kind of became closer friends. So it was a little weirder. I wasn't able to be as frustrated with her, and I was really used to just everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that track, like, we tried to produce it. We always try sitting next to each other, producing a song. Steven and I, like, we could sit next to each other and produce a song because I could look at him and I could say, like, I hate you right now. But, and then, like, we could, like, get through it. But, like, Nike, it was especially at the beginning. Now we're a lot closer as friends. But before, if I would sit next to her and I'd play a chord and I'd be like, this chord is great. Like, A major 7.
Like, amazing.
And, like, this inversion and everything. Like, I'm playing with a new tuning and I'm like, I'm stoked. This is something that I had never done before. And then she's like, I don't like it. And I'm like, well, then you just don't get it. But, like, I can't say that. And obviously, it's also, it's not, it's just me, my hubris, just being like, this, like, because it's new for me, I assume it's the newest thing of music. But she'll be like, I don't like it. And so at a certain point, especially with Pomian, which is our first one we did together and the first one that she released, she and I were living together. And I was just like, you can go to your room. You can like go hang out. I'm just going to like lay down the most basic guitars, bass. That song's really simple, ambient. And I just like until like 3 a.m. because that's when I work my best is I think I get very self-conscious. So if I'm sitting there and I play something and then someone says, I don't like that, then I'm like, oh no, like I suck. But if she's gone, if everyone who I'm working with is gone and I mess up, I'm like, I mess up sometimes. Like I can beat myself to like, I can just be like, okay, that didn't work. Next part. As long as like I'm saying I didn't like it, then I'm like, I can do better. But she's saying she didn't like it, then I'm like, I can't do better.
Right.
So that worked out that way where she left. We kind of went off our separate ways. I sent her the song then, which sounded a little, it had the same vibe as the one that has just been released, the final version. But then she could say back, like, I don't like the bass tone, or like, I don't like the acoustic guitar delay, or like the chords. Can we like make that simpler or arpeggio? She's really, I get very maximalist. I'm very insecure. So I tend to stuff every layer I could.
Yeah, I think especially when I've like talked to, because Steven, I think, helps me in a lot of the ways that you've helped him, which is like, so I want to thank you for helping me via Steven.
The transitive.
It really. But I think I do a lot of the same thing. Like, I think if I'm going to work on a track with someone, I'm like, oh, everything needs horns, or everything needs a full like cello section with violin, like in different arpeggiations and stuff. And I think that I always need someone to hold me back to say this needs to be simpler. Because a lot of the stuff that I'm producing right now is just very piano and vocals for like a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that I definitely have issues with. But I think
that's tough too when it's just two things.
Well, it makes you think of like all the people that like you can listen to like a regular guitarist or vocalist and just two instruments and you could have it sound one way. But then you listen to like an Elliott Smith track and it's just him and a guitar, but it sounds 10 times more full for some reason. And you just kind of be like, how? And then you have to like work yourself out. But I think your work ethic is like something that I've always looked up to, because when I've talked to specifically Steve, because I've always asked him for production help. And he said, the only way you're going to learn production help is if you just put in your 10,000 hours. Mm-hmm. And if you just say no to hanging out with people for a day or two, and just work on it and just force yourself into it, that's how you'll actually learn.
And it's funny because like, and I don't think Steven will mind me saying this, but that change of work ethic came from me junior year of college. I was living in Dorchester with Steve and Pat, our friend Pat and our friend Jill. And we had a basement. And so, and all of us do music. Jill sings, Pat produces like me. Steven obviously produces Spider Rock. Pat just does his own solo work.
Pat's stuff is incredible.
Pat's stuff's incredible and even more all over the place than mine is.
In the two interviews that I've done so far with, I did Andy and now Steven, you and Pat have been brought up always. We're always like, oh, their tracks are so good.
Well, so, because Pat and I, we're both a little socially awkward. And Steven's like, he's great at being by himself, but he can work a room like nobody's business, and it's something I've always envied of his, and that's why like I've always stuck with him. Like especially at the start of college, I was like, oh man, like I can't say anything to anybody, but he can, so I'm gonna hang out with him. And so we were sitting, we decked out this basement to be a studio. It was my first time ever having like a studio that I just like I could sit at, monitors, keyboards, everything, and new interfaces, like all the mics I owned. I got everything and I put it in this basement, and Pat and I spent 24/7 down there. Anytime we weren't in class, like we stayed up till 3 a.m., got up at 8 a.m., just disgusting lifestyle of any minute we could, we were down in the basement working. And it was partly a social thing. It was that we would get invited places, and we didn't like to go. And it wasn't that, like, we didn't like these people. It was just that, like, we didn't like ourselves in crowds. And so Pat and I just locked ourselves in this basement. And so then when it came to Steven, and, like, Steven and Jill kind of went off. And Pat and I went crazy. Like, they, I don't think, like, oh, they were, like, lazy or anything for going out and hanging out with friends. Like, the aftermath of me hanging out with people and not being able to look people in the eyes for a good year afterwards, like, there are things I regret about that, without a doubt. But at a certain point, Steven had kind of collected all his own songs. And Steven also, he's writing scripts. Like, and I think we had a lot of arguments about that earlier, because he would kind of compare his music work ethic with mine, completely disregarding his own scripts. And so he would spend hours and hours on scripts, and I'd spend hours and hours on music, but he would only spend like a few hours on music. And then he would only compare those two. And so we got really frustrated with each other that year. And he was like, can you help me produce this album? And our schedules were just opposite. Anytime that I was free, he was not. And so I was like, I can help you where I can. Just because I was the one that knew how to use the equipment. It was all my equipment. So I was like, but just use any of the equipment you want. And we got into so many fights. So many fights of just him being like, I don't know how to produce. And then me being like, just mess around. Yeah, it was like, it was the most frustrating period of our friendship, because we were both trying to figure out, I think, the purpose of why we wrote music, like what we were doing it for. We were competitive with each other, and so it's sometimes hard to even recount the memories unbiasedly, because like I'd be producing the album, and then Mackenzie would come over, who, like, knows, he's really, like, done his research about what.
Oh, Mackenzie Keefe.
Mackenzie Keefe, yeah.
Okay, yeah, cool. Also, someone who also gets brought up in almost all the podcasts I've done.
Yeah, and he was the one that, like, got me into using drum machines, kind of where I'd seen, like, he was my work ethic inspiration. And so then, like, Steven would bring him in for a track, and then I'd get really competitive and I get really pissed off, and I'd be like, it's good, but like, well, I don't know, like,
oh my god,
where's the acoustic guitar? You know, Steven wrote an acoustic guitar, why doesn't it have it? Like, I would just get pissed,
right? Even though I think Spider Rock gets brought up in, like, your group of friends I talk about a lot. I love how many different variations all those songs have gone through.
Yeah, they've gone through brick and mortar.
Whenever I've hung out with Stevie, he's shown me like one or two things that you've done, and it's interesting. I can bet on your computer, like, how many different versions are there of Gay Thoughts? I feel like there's a billion different versions of like all of the new stuff you've put out.
Gay in a Thoughts. Weird way. Was pretty complete.
Okay.
It was the one that, like, that was the version.
Out of the four new songs, what do you think of what has come out the most? Like, what was the hardest track to really get that vibe with that you were trying to with? Between Lust for Life, Church of the Fabulous, and all those.
It was definitely Lust for Love, because I had written that. That started off an acoustic song, and it started off an improvised song, where, like, we were all dancing around a dorm room, and I was just like, oh, then I, and that's why, like, half the lyrics are just repeating. It's just because I was just improvising a dance beat. And then whatever, another year passes, and I've learned how to now have collected synthesizers and drum machines, and I've learned to use the computer a little bit more, and I'd kind of hadn't yet gone into dance music. I'm trying to think why I went into dance music.
I was going to ask that same question, because obviously when I first met you, I think in your sophomore year of Emerson, I think that's when we first met.
Yeah, it would have been completely acoustic music.
Yeah, and I mean, trust me, I have many questions on your acoustic tracks that we will get to, because you know that I'm way too obsessed with them, and I think I've voiced those to you a lot. At this point, for me, as like not even, obviously we're friends, but in a way that I see you as a musician and as an artist, are you just pushing down barriers. You're just like, you know what? I'll just be a dance artist now. When you first released Growl, I was like, this song is so good. And like, this song is amazing. And like, this is the stuff that I've always like thought like Max would be. And then the next track you put out, I was like, okay, I'm very confused now.
Yeah. And so, which is funny, because I did most of Lust for Love in my own, and like the albums that will be coming out in this album, Super Bloom, the dance album, I did on my own in my basement, but I did go into the studio a few times for drum tracks from Mike Levesque, who's a drummer. I've been a studio drummer who I've been working with for a long time. He was like, I've been working with him for a while. And so I went to the studio, and I remember I was working on Lust for Love, and he was like, so what other songs do you have? And I like played Growl, and he was like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, is this going to go on the same album? And I was like, I think so. And he was like, really? And I was like, yeah. Like, and then now it's not. Yeah. So dance music came, because I was working a lot with the band Modern Painters, playing guitar, and I've worked with Gabe Goodman, the lead songwriter on that band, he's my next door neighbor. I've known him since he was born. He's the one that inspired me to write songs, taught me how to write songs, put me on that path. And so he's always been musically, mentally a few years ahead of me, just because he started writing before me. And so I started writing acoustic music. He's the one that got me into indie rock. Started out, he introduced me to Coldplay.
And then...
That's very indie rock.
So started off Coldplay when we were like 12. And like Death Cab for Cutie. And then eventually The National. And then Modest Mouse. And it's funny, like we were going to Modest Mouse concerts and I was like 13. And they like let us be front row because I was 4 feet tall. And they were like, get these kids to the front. But... So I'd start to write acoustic songs, and I couldn't get past the fact that they were worse songs than Gabe's, in my opinion. Is that Gabe is this incredible songwriter, this incredible lyricist, just really was able to, from the start, just a great, honest songwriter, and really mature. And my songs just felt like, if he was Radiohead, I was Coldplay. Gotcha. We're like... And at the time, when you're 18, like to be Coldplay kind of feels suckish if he's Radiohead.
I think that's just a very normal thing that happens with kids, especially in music, because you could be a freshman or sophomore doing your Battle of the Bands, and then you see the seniors above you, and you're like, oh, I suck. Something with that along the same lines.
And it was he was so interested in pushing forward art. And like, because again, he was a few years ahead of me. He had gotten all those folk songs on a guitar away. So now he was trying to push himself to write something new. And so that's where he was like Radiohead to me. And so to be Coldplay felt like I was writing kids' music. And so I couldn't stop judging my music. I hated my music. And so one day I was like, let's just stop writing folk music. Because I'm never going to be able to look at my own song and not hear Gabe saying, like, what, like, stop talking about your friends. like, it was just like, it was this judgment thing where I was like, I just need to switch it up. So I'm going to start writing. I liked LCD Sound System and like Talking Heads. I was like, I'm just going to start writing dance music. So I start writing dance music. And it was the first time that I was able to start writing for myself. And so that's why I've always, like, though I do sometimes feel an emotional connection more to my acoustic music as I've gone through therapy and became more secure about that music. Dance music was like, that was how I learned to write, because that's where I started off writing lyrics that were like, ooh, baby, baby, like, you hurt me so bad. I didn't care. I never thought that you'd get me feeling like that. Like, that was, like, an old verse of a first dance song. And then, very quickly, I was able to learn how to be honest with myself write songs about how I was feeling and how to do that without being so on the nose, but still a little bit on the nose because I kind of like on the nose. So that's where dance music has always, that's where it stays for me.
Gotcha.
Is it's where I can go that I feel like that's where I'm the only one of my friends doing that. I'm not the only one in the world doing that, and I don't think by any means I'm unique with my sound, but I do think as far as my friends, like I'm the only one doing that type of dance music, and therefore I can figure out who I am as a songwriter through those.
But that's such an interesting approach. And I really think that that takes a lot of not only courage, but also like definitely like going back to your drive and ambition just to like stand out more and like figure out who you are. I think that's a great thing. But I, at some point, just for me as a fan as well, I honestly think there was 48 hours of me like during the beginning of February, end of January of this year, where I literally listened to your acoustic stuff on repeat for maybe 48 hours.
And I do.
So I think you should understand the emotional connection that you have put in those songs definitely translates to people who aren't you. I just wanted you to know that as an artist, yeah. Like you, as a fan telling you, they are just amazing, well-written songs.
Thank you.
So I just wanted, I've always wanted to let you know that.
And I do continue to like, especially during this break, I have been writing almost exclusively acoustic music. Especially because I didn't have any of my shit. All I had was an acoustic guitar for the most part and a mic. And so I've been rekindling my love for my acoustic music right now. And like I wrote a song recently, and like maybe I can play it later, that was as honest as I've ever been in a song. And that it clicked on me just as, not even just with acoustic music, just as a songwriter, I was like, oh, the way that that song made me feel afterwards was like nothing I'd ever felt before. So I was like, that's what I'm aiming for again now.
Got you. That's an interesting circle, man. That's a weird, interesting, like artistic circle of finding out who you are, man.
It is. And it's funny because I am still like, I am writing. I like, as soon as we hang up, like I'm going to be trying to finish up a dance song that I've been working on too. That's just because like I wrote a song that was kind of a joke, and that's where dance music kind of sometimes goes, not as a joke but as like catharsis of not taking myself so seriously, is where like there's so many textures of Lust for Love where I'm going like and then it's like a ton of delay all over, so you just hear in the middle of it like
all over,
yeah,
all over your ears. And
well, dude, the music's fun. Like, that's like the best thing I could say. I remember the first time I heard Lust for Love or Church of the Fabulous, I was blown away. I was like, I can't even believe this is the same artist that I've liked for a long time. So, it's really fun dance music, man. So you're doing your job. Like, it's great. It's really good.
Thank you.
I don't know. The idea of releasing music has always been scary. For a lot of reasons, for all the general business reasons, but also because I've always worried that at some point someone was going to say, you got to choose one. And like, I know I could always like have side projects where I could say like some I'm releasing under Max Dorado, some I'm releasing under like
blah, like the blahs.
The blahs.
And.
But like, I've never really wanted that. I've never wanted to tour two separate projects. I've kind of like, just because they've both been so honestly what I've liked to do, so I don't know.
That's a good question. I mean, between when you say touring and everything else, what has playing music in Boston compared to music in LA been like what are the different vibes? Because I knew that I asked Andy that, but he does a completely different genre of music.
Yeah.
So as someone who has performed like with so many different acts between Spider Rock and Modern Painters and just yourself compared to the LA scene, why do you feel is different?
I can't speak to me performing myself just because I haven't done it recently, or I've barely done it as me. I did a few so far. It was in Boston and a few like acoustic. There's a company called Treehouse, which is very similar in Los Angeles. But I can say that as far as being in the scene, Boston, it's a lot more cultural, a lot more hobbyish. It's like, here's a lot of people, like there are a few bands that come out that like obviously do it completely, like this is what they want to do for the rest of their lives. But then you find a lot of other bands are just people doing it on their side job. It's a side job. It's a little hobby with Boston. And it's grungier. It's a lot less professional. It's a lot more, let's go have fun, play in the basement. It's like, it's basement in Boston. It's basement shows. It is college kids. Whereas in LA, it's not really basement shows. I'm sure there are. I never gotten to hear about any. It's really every band plays with a backing track. Even if it's a full band, they are playing with computers that have like synth programs in it. Like really every band is polished. There's like a, what is that Father John Misty lyric? He's like, these LA phonies and their bullshit bands that sound like Dollar Signs and Amy Grant. Like, I think
that's the lyric. Where it's like, it
got frustrating coming from Boston, because I was like, I completely respect that these people are putting their all into it and it's a professional thing. But I was like, where are the basement shows? Where are people just performing?
To perform.
Just to like hear the only, like the guitarist is the only guitar playing. There's no backing track of some acoustic guitar that is just not being on stage.
Interesting. Do you find that the same way? Could you compare that to the dance scene, or is it completely different? Because I feel like if you're a dance artist, is it more of like a DJ set in a way, or?
It's, if I was to compare it to dance music, I would compare it to like churches, where it's like the singer, like all of a sudden they'll sing and then they'll go like, and then for the chorus they'll just go like, here we go, and then all of a sudden like a, just like a voice modulated computer, like, here we go, oh 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 oh, here we go, oh, oh, like would just come out of nowhere,
right?
And you would just be like, it felt lifeless. And it is my biggest issue with the LA music scene, is that it just feels like a lot of people who want to get famous, which, like, don't get me wrong, I want to get famous more than anybody.
Right.
But like, these are people that like, they might, and it's just because they're so tight. It's like, you've played in the Boston, you know, those bands that come out of nowhere that are just so tight.
Dumb good.
That you're just kind of like, that the songs feel a little lifeless.
Yeah.
Like, it didn't feel like, no one felt excited to have performed their songs. Everyone just felt having excited to have been on a stage.
Yeah, no, I feel like if you go to like the Austin or Brighton music scene with like the hardcore bands, or like even just like the punk bands, like the DIY scene there, I think that there is even just an energy of seeing someone play live music, which is exhilarating and it fun. Is
complete. Yes, completely. It is. There is, and I have my complete gripes with the Boston music scene too, because it is very aesthetic driven, where it is like, people would rather hear someone moaning behind lo-fi grunge than they would hear someone really trying to make it and playing like, and I think that was like, I remember just hearing, like, I've heard bands sing lyrics that like have astounded me at how stupid and how like pretentious, like I don't even think I could try to make one up, because I think I'll end up just saying a real lyric that someone has, that I've heard, that someone is going to be like, oh shit. But it's, I've gotten mad at the music scene just because it does feel.
Well, it's the very art school scene.
Yeah.
Let's just say it that way. It's a lot of mass art kids. It's in a lot of, I don't want to poke, but some Emerson kids could be guilty.
I have no ownership to Emerson or loyalty.
No loyalty to the Emerson Mafia?
No. I love the people I met there. I don't love all the people I met there. I love the friends I made there. It was a tough scene. I think my issue is I don't like any scene that is too defined.
Gotcha.
And I think that's where I had an issue with Emerson. That's where I have an issue with the Boston music scene, is that like, it's like the thing that I love about, like, that I'm romantic about, the like 70s New York scene.
You should come to New York, because a lot of it's similar.
I was thinking, and I have, like, as soon as obviously this quarantine is, as soon as New York's not in flames, like,
I don't know, dude. I have had friends who are moving there now. It's dumb cheap.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. As awful as it sounds, there's so many apartments. I'm sure it's opened up,
dude. It's people. One of my best friends is moving to the city, and he found a 2-bedroom apartment in the Lower East Side for in the Heights prices. It's crazy.
That's nuts.
It's dumb. No space, but
yeah.
And like, the thing I'm so romantic about that era of like New York, and maybe it's still that, but like, especially like the ones you hear about in all the movies and like Meet Me in the Bathroom, that whole era. And like CBGBs and Talking Heads, is that they weren't linked in their sound. Like the Stooges and the Talking Heads don't really sound alike.
But they played the same shows at the same club.
They played the same because what they shared was a passion for like expression, especially in like this kind of new coming age of anxiety. And so like, and like they're not apples and oranges. They're somewhat similar, but what that music scene was defined by was innovation and new forms of expression.
Even
if you were like, I guess the idea of expression, even between like, you could see like Dead Boys and Debbie Harry on the same bill and like Blondie, which is like, that doesn't work at all in the slightest. If you think of it, if you played it back to back.
Oh yeah.
Yet they're so full of what art that they want to represent that it works perfectly. It's weird.
I was watching the Bob Dylan documentary that's on Netflix. I think it's No Direction Home, and he was saying that the thing that he has always loved about all his favorite artists is that they stand up on stage and they have this look in their eye like they know something that you don't. And I was like, that's great. And that's, I really felt I related to that, where I do love an artist that stands up there and it's like, where that's where I feel like all those artists, they stood up there and like you could tell that like maybe they aren't cool, but they thought they were cool. And that kind of made them. And I think another thing about the Boston music scene is like one of the biggest bands to come out of it recently has been Vundabar.
Yeah.
Who are great. But I went to high school with them. And so
you went to high school with them? They went to Scituate High School.
I did drama club with Brandon, and like I was in school band with Drew, like, so it was hard to see, not that they're not incredibly talented, I listen to their songs all the time, I think they're great, but it was hard for me to see them as like cool,
right?
To go to a college show and everyone be like, oh man, like I remember they played a song before they graduated at a open mic night talent show at my school on an acoustic guitar. I think it was Greenland. It was like their first big single. And then I saw them at a basement show the next year, and like they played Greenland, and now it's like fully electric, kind of how it sounds in the record. And like everyone's like, oh, this is kind of good. And then I saw them a few months later at a house show, and now kind of a few people are singing the song. They're playing it again, Greenland, but now everyone's like, that's what I waited for. And then I go to another house show like 3 months later, and everybody's singing the chorus of this song that I saw them premiere at a talent show at like Scituate High School on an acoustic guitar in like my chorus classroom. And so it was hard. I instantly, the Boston music scene was demystified.
Got you.
It was like, oh, Vundabar, like, I performed in the Crucible with them.
That's awesome, though.
And so it was, and I remember and I was also jealousy, and it was, like, envy, and it was, like, I had a girlfriend sophomore year of college, and I really liked her music taste, and I was like, you know, and especially when you're dating in, like, early college, like, the first questions you ask, you're like, oh, so what music do you listen to?
Right.
And she was like, I really like this band, Vundabar, and I was like, oh.
I can name you 8 bands that I feel the same with that I'm, like, weirdly connected with. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's the same vibe.
What's a band? Paris. Have you
heard of the V?
So, weirdly enough, there was this band in the early 2000s where they were a Warped Tour band. And I went to a wedding in Italy. And one of the bridesmaids for, like, my friend Billy, who was getting married, she was the producer of Paris.
Okay.
And she was like, yeah, we produced their first record. And now they're gigantic. It was just so freaky.
Well, so I beat them in a battle of the bands as they were Paris. This is
really
junior. This is junior year of high school.
And they were, this is again, one of those bands that was so tight that, like, I think the judges were kind of like, where's the, like, it was like, where's the,
what's it called?
The finesse.
Not even the finesse, because they were full of finesse. They were like, where's the heart? Because the rest of us are all high school bands, and they're a little older than us, and they're really tight. And they were a little bit, I don't know. I think they were probably already on the rise, and they're kind of in this shitty little battle of the band. So they might have just felt a little bigger than that, and obviously they ended up being much bigger than
they're
that.
They're gigantic.
But we beat them. And whatever, they're not my cup of tea as far as music. I don't think I've only listened to, like, one of their songs recently, but I was, like, searching around on Spotify one day years later, and Paris is, like, on, like, the best new music or something, and I, like, click on their page. I was like, oh, strange. And all of a sudden I realized they have 15 million, like, 30 million plays. And then all of a sudden, like, a family friend starts texting me about Paris, and I was like, what, like, when did that happen? Like, I beat them in a battle of the bands.
Well, do you find yourself feeling jaded?
Oh my god, I am awful. I've gone through so much therapy, but that still hasn't fixed that part of me yet. I've still never been able to be like, oh, like, Vundabar opened up for Beck, like, good for them. Like, I've like, oh, that's awesome for them, like, they've worked hard for it. I've never been able to just be like that. I've always just been like, oh, like, they're based on an aesthetic or something, which they're not. And I listen to their songs a lot, but as soon as, like, I hate that they're successful.
And wow,
it makes me dislike them, which it shouldn't, because they are sweet, sweet people and talented writers.
I feel like I find that way. Do you remember, because I know that the lead singer, Nick Santino, was from Braintree and not Scituate, but when Rocket to the Moon was really big, I was feeling the same way.
Yeah.
That was the same vibe that I was feeling, because they were just a gigantic band. And I was like, I've known this person. You know what I mean?
And it's like, it's just funny because, like, I used to play shows with Vundabar. Like, they opened up for me one show when we opened up for McLovin. Like, McLovin had a band, and it went Vundabar, Closer Than We Appear, which was my band in high school, the Young Rapscallions, which was McLovin's band. And so, like, it's just this feeling of, like, unjustified, like, well, we just didn't make it because we didn't go out and play the game. But if we played the game, man, like, the world would have loved us. It's a complete...
Do you have a weird aspiration for the dance music in the way that you're quote-unquote playing the game? Or is it...
No, it's never been that I felt like that was more accessible. it's always been, and it kind of stems back a little bit to the Boston music scene too, is that, like, I remember there was a show, it was just an acoustic show, and everyone was sitting around as more and more sad people sang their sad songs. And then I realized that if someone had said, and then there was this artist, and I was like, oh, like another sad artist playing another sad songs. And I was like, but the worst part is that they sound just like my songs. I was like, and so then I realized that if someone was like, well, Max, you go play a song, that I would have just been another sad person playing sad songs. And I didn't like that because I didn't think that was me. Like, I have no shame in saying that I have some deep emotions, that I can be sad sometimes. But as far as when people are hanging out with me, I don't tend to like to mope. And so it seemed weird that, like, if people were going to pay to see me all of a sudden, that I would be moping. It seemed like, and it was just, it's me. It's, I love sad music more than anything. But standing up in front of stage, if I had my friends come and see me, I think looking out and seeing them dancing would have felt more rewarding for me than just, and the biggest thing is I hate standing. I hate standing more than anything.
That's your biggest gripe with humanity is standing?
I hate standing so much. I have terrible back posture. I hate standing. I hate going to see concerts because I hate standing. And it's me. I was like, but if they're dancing, then, like, it's at least, like, you can move around. Your blood's not, like, all trapped at your knees. Like, it's your... I hate locking my legs. I love being able to walk or something. I could walk for hours. I can't stand still. And I was like, so I want people to be able to dance at my shows. I don't want to see a bunch of people standing still and being uncomfortable and then me talking about how uncomfortable I am.
Got you. I mean, that's a very interesting way to look at it, man. Like, in a weird way, it's seeing what you want in the world and then making it happen. Like, you know what I mean? That's exactly what you're projecting, which is cool. And I think that's, like, you're getting it across, man. Seriously, all of the music you're doing, and I think all of your emotions are not only validated, but they're coming across to a lot of different people. And I think that you should be really proud, dude.
Thank you. That's really nice.
Yeah, man. But dude, you're literally, I don't know. I just don't want to go too long because I don't want to keep you because I don't need you to finish some dance music for me.
Oh, but also no pressure. I'm trapped here.
Well, that's good. Dude, thank you again for hanging out. I like listening to you talk and your perspective of life is not, it's just inspiring to me. So I hope it's inspiring to a lot of other people.
Thank you.
And I mean that seriously. And when we're together, let's hang out when it's possible.
Sure. Rock and roll. If you want, it could be kind of fun. I could show you a new acoustic song.
I would love that. Could you really premiere a song right now?
I could premiere a song. I was like, why not? Let's see.
I would seriously love that. And it's weird. I'm not even going to lie because can I say something that's really honest?
Of course.
I had a dream last night that you would premiere a song last night. It was instead we were doing the podcast in my basement and we were like with a bunch of friends and you just randomly said, can I premiere a song? And I said, yes. So I'm happy that I projected that.
I think I've just been playing it a lot and I really
hate knowing how to play guitar. Like, it's one of my biggest fallbacks as, like, a songwriter is I find that I have a really hard time writing in standard tuning just because I know it really well.
Well, no, that's, I was, I'm working on a new album, right? Working on, like, new songs and I'm working on this new
Which
project.
I've heard, by the way. I heard one and I loved it.
Thank you.
Forward thinking of what happened in the last Amy Incident project.
Yeah, I'm very trying to go against. Well, because I knew that you'd relate to this. The album name right now is Watching Your Friends Get Famous. So I feel that's a very Max Serato feeling with that. The reason I started writing a lot of those songs is Danny Barbati, who we're mutually friends with as well. He was like, dude, if you just go in a random tuning, you don't know how to play in it. So it'll help you be more creative. And that's exactly how I wrote in a lot of the new songs. Because they're in C minor tuning.
Yeah, every new tuning or every new song I've written has been in this new tuning. Because it takes
you out of it.
it makes it like all of a sudden I don't know what this note is anymore.
Right.
And like I can't even tell you what these notes are tuned to, what these strings are tuned to. It's because it's just, I think it was like I saw Joni Mitchell, it's like a sheet music that said she had tuned to this. And
I mean, I started with like, oh, what's the weirdest tuning? Then I went with the American football tuning. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Start with that. And then I just started going like off the rails.
It takes me about a week before I've learned where like this inversion of C is now. But it does help me creating melodies. And it's always like, I love learning to forget how to play guitar.
Gotcha. No, I agree. Well, dude, let me mute myself. I'll give you some more so it's not all broken up in the background. And how about you introduce the song, right? This is Max Dorada doing a premiering a track.
So let's call it, right now it's called Song for Jen, because it's about a bunch of friends that we all lived in a house together. My life seems dull at first, I know. But then I look into my arms and see the best friends I could ask for, and they really love me. A beautiful ocean at the bottom of the street. A life so beautiful I jump up to my feet. Will you look me in the eye? Please see me as once a child. A blank slate they paint in a painting running wild. See first light, first finding out that I can smile. Or growing older, being this guy for a while. Have I ever hurt you? Will I ever cause you pain? I beg for your forgiveness and to see me through the change. And if I've hurt you in the past, and if you hate me, you're entitled to that. And if I never win your trust, it's hard to hear, but I can understand as much. All I need is some encouraging. I've been moving but not wandering. Wearing truth and not protecting. Bearing love without expecting. Finding faults and correcting. Keep my friends and connecting. I will share your happiness, your grief. I will share your joy, if not belief. I will share your time, not as a thief. I will be your cause and hopefully some relief. It's no real struggle, but it's mine. How to speak with love while I'm still speaking my mind. How to spare a glance while spare a thought. How to be okay if I'm not. How do I tell you I'm in pain? When I seem shameless just to cover deeper shame. And that I'm scared, scared sick, that I'll be scared the rest of my life. Too scared to sleep, so I don't sleep and don't think right. How do I tell you all of that? Without everything changing and you and me still making you and me laugh. It's like a montage in my head. Every good joke that any one of us ever said. 1 a.m. and Pat is knocking at my door. Or hearing Jill singing through the floor. Steven and I crying, driving far away from home. Albert's magic tricks he does when he's stoned. I've felt a lot of things, but never felt alone. If this is happiness, it's all I've ever known. Na-da-da-da-da-doom-doom. Na-da-da-da-da-doom-doom.
My life seems dull at first, I know, but then I look into my arms and see the best friends I could ask for, and they really love me. A beautiful ocean at the bottom of the street, a life so beautiful I'll jump up to my feet when you look me in the eyes.
Wow, man. Jeez, it's gonna make me emotional.
That's the emotional one. That's
dude. Man, I freaking loved it.
Saying, thank you. That was the one I was saying was the most emotion. Like, that was the one that I was like, oh, that's a whole new set of feelings that I haven't worked with.
Dude, I mean, even just comparing that, like, that's not Sylvia Plath. Like, that's like real deep stuff.
Thank you.
Trust me, I love both those songs, but man, that was really, really touching.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me premiere that one.
Dude, no, I'm thankful, because guess what? You're going to be, you know, someone, dude, someday. And that's really cool. So, but dude, thank you so much for hanging out, and please, like, stay safe and healthy during quarantine, man.
Yes, you as well, especially you in New York.
Oh, dude, I'm in the hub.
But enjoy a little bit of isolation as far as music-wise. I think we're going to see a lot of really great art coming out of this time.
Trust me, I'm tempted to go into Manhattan and just shoot all the empty streets. So maybe we'll see. I'll have to wear a mask. But Max, you're the man. Thank you so much for giving your insight on not
only for having me
and everything. And thank you for premiering a song. Dude, you're the best. I'll text you. You're the man. Thank you so much.
Love you, buddy.
Bye, buddy. See you later.